You're listening to Inner Demons, the comic book podcast based on Marvel's very own spirit of vengeance, Ghost Rider. Here we will discuss comics, news, movie and TV appearances, and everything in between. And now, here are your hosts on this fiery road to hell, Chris Munn and Brian Biggie. Let's ride.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 38 of Inner Demons, the first episode that we've had since we went on our couple-month hiatus. I am one of your co-hosts, Chris Munn, and with me, as always, is Brian Locoweed Biggie. What is up, Brian?
Chris, what's going on? It's good to be back.
Yes, it is. Oh, you know, we needed that break, but, oh, man, it's so nice to be recording again. We got lots of Ghost Rider stuff to talk about. We've got some great reviews for this episode. We're going to be looking at Avengers number 14 and 15 of the current series, Ghost Rider 2099 number 13, and Ghost Rider number 13 from the 70s series. Yep. So, but before we get to any reviews, Brian, you've got some Twitter stuff you wanted to catch us up on.
Yes, we had a poll pretty recently. Rod Race has been pretty big in the Marvel Universe right now. He's been on the Avengers. You know, obviously, he was in S.H.I.E.L.D. a few years ago, and he's been around a lot. But I keep hearing from certain fans, yay or nay, if he is a Ghost Rider or is he not a Ghost Rider. And I had to put it out as a poll because I just wanted to kind of get a more clear answer. And as you'll see after this poll results, it's not exactly cut and dry. So the question was this from a few weeks back. It's all right, gang. Controversial poll coming at you. Robbie Reyes has been Ghost Rider since 2014. He's been in comics, games, even on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But some fans only call him Robbie Reyes. Others consider him the actual Ghost Rider. Which are you? So we had many people post some comments and results. We had 157 votes.
Good Lord. Nice.
And it is pretty darn close. 41% of the vote says Robbie Reyes is definitely Ghost Rider.
Oh, okay.
41% says Johnny Blaze is the real Ghost Rider.
Okay.
And then we have 18% is comment below. So we have a list of comments here. So those first two were completely split down the middle, 41%.
Yeah,
before I read some of the comments, what are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Oh, well, you know, I think we've talked about before just privately. Whenever I refer to Robbie Reyes, I only say Robbie Reyes. I don't say Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
But I don't consider, you know, I consider him to be a Ghost Rider just like I consider, like, Carter Slade as a Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider 2099 is Ghost Rider. It's a concept that there's more than one character. Now, I ain't gonna lie. Mm-hmm. When I think of Ghost Rider, I don't even think of Johnny Blaze. I think of Danny Ketch because that's what I grew up with.
Right.
You know, that's my Ghost Rider. But still, even if someone just says Ghost Rider to me, Johnny Blaze is the first thing pops in my head. I don't think of Robbie Reyes. I don't think of any of the other variations. I think of Johnny Blaze.
Yep.
So,
I
think Johnny Blaze is Ghost Rider. But Robbie Ray is just as much a claim to that name as any of the others.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Well, you know, we got a lot of really interesting answers, so I'll read through some of them before we get to our reviews. So we have Ghost Rider UK, one of our oldest friends, says, Robbie Reyes is this generation's Ghost Rider, like Danny Ketch was mine. It's great that there are modern versions of the character to read. It gives new readers of Ghost Rider the chance to delve deeper and discover the past riders. However, Robbie Reyes is Ghost Rider in look, but not in spirit of vengeance. So therefore, he is not the Ghost Rider. Maldacito says, Danny is the Ghost Rider. Johnny is Zarathos. Robbie is Eli. Delvin Cox from the Delvin Cox Experience says, Danny Ketch is my generation's Ghost Rider, but any of the three main ones are acceptable answers. I look at Ghost Riders as Green Lanterns. There are different ones, and everyone has their own favorites, but they are all pretty cool. And Ghost Rider UK responded, damn it, this answer right here. Tomb of Ideas, our friends in the horror podcast world, says, I came up in the Spirits of Vengeance era, so I'm okay with having multiple Ghost Riders. I think Blaze and Reyes are distinct enough characters that they could fill different roles in the Marvel Universe. That said, I also miss Danny Ketch quite a bit. Ray over Into the Night, our good friend, he says, might ripple waters here, but although I love Robbie Reyes and his Ghost Rider is cool, to me, the real Ghost Rider is the one connected to Zarathos only. I understand Reyes' Ghost Rider is his Uncle Eli. Please let me know if I'm misunderstanding anything.
There's a lot to misunderstand. I mean, it's not misunderstanding, yep. It's just conflicting stories.
Right, exactly. We have a few more answers. We have our friend David Finn over at the Signal of Doom. Says, this is a tough one. I love both. Two different eras, two different riders. That was his answer. Shaken Not Nerd says, oh, this is hard. If you asked me 12 months ago, it's Robbie 100%. I love and appreciate Blaze, but Robbie was just amazing. But there is a new contender. I think my favorite is Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Wow.
Don Cates, thank you. Punisher plus Ghost Rider plus the Herald of Galactus and his amazing books. We have, let's say, ChocoChewy88 says, Robbie Reyes is indeed a Ghost Rider, but so are Johnny Blaze and Dan Ketch. Nothing wrong with having several Spirits of Vengeance in the Marvel Universe. Scott Romanski says, Ghost Rider to me is Danny Ketch, since he was the writer when I got into the character. The Pod Askew podcast says, they can both be Ghost Rider, but in different incarnations. Kevin Bauer says, Reyes is a fantastic character, but in my honest opinion, Blaze will always be classic Ghost Rider, but Ketch and the Spirits of Vengeance will always be the Ghost Rider. And that's why Ghost Rider probably shouldn't join the MCU for a while. If they went classic, it'd look a little like whitewashing, he says. Paul the Pullbox says, considering there was a cowboy of the Old West riding around as a Ghost Rider, I say that Blaze was, in fact, a Ghost Rider. And Reyes is the most recent Ghost Rider, definitely. He says, come at me, bro. Number four, the Lizard, says, I'm a Ketch and a Blaze fan. Robbie is dope, though. Abby, however, says, Jason Aaron did not expand canon for there to be 100-plus Ghost Riders for clowns in the comments section to only acknowledge Johnny Blaze as the only Ghost Rider.
Ooh, that's fair.
Rokal 3 says, Robbie Reyes is not a real Ghost Rider. He's his own thing, different origin, different power set. George Alexander says, I grew up with Johnny Blaze's Ghost Rider, but Danny Ketch is the definitive one for me. Just a few more. Sparky Malarkey says, Robbie Reyes is definitely my Ghost Rider. And she put hearts around the flaming skulls.
Nice. Cute.
Yes, very nice. Hellfire 187 says, Robbie Reyes is Ghost Rider, but he is no Spirit of Vengeance like Blaze, Ketch, and Jones. Bogey says, I think when you have multiple characters assuming the same mantle, especially at the same time, you should just use their name. I refer to the Ghost Riders and their identities, but not their title. Johnny was my first incarnation to the Spirit of Vengeance, so he gets my vote, says Michael Spivey. Ironically, the first Ghost Rider comic I read was the last issue of the first series.
Oh, wow. What a place to come in.
Yep. Andy says Danny Ketch is his guy himself. Cletus says, love all of them, but I'm Team Ketch. Danny rocked that pen and stare. And last but not least, Walmart says he is a Ghost Rider. Him being bonded with Eli isn't all that different from Noble Kale being bonded to the Spirits of Vengeance. So, thank you, all of you, listeners who commented on that. I know that's kind of a hot-button issue, so we definitely wanted to hear your feedback, and definitely appreciate everyone who sent something
in. Absolutely, yeah. It's great to hear from all the fans. Yeah, I mean, and there's a shit ton of new Ghost Rider stuff coming out, and that's been announced in the gap that we took since our last recording. Danny Ketch is coming back in Marvel Comics Presents. I think Ed Brisson is writing that. You've got Challenge of the Ghost Riders, the arc, the post-War of Realms arc in Avengers that's coming up that brings Johnny Blaze back, which looks like it's going to be awesome. You've got the continuing Guardians of the Galaxy series, the continuing Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History miniseries. But the big news. Fucking Ghost Panther's coming back. Ghost Panther annual number one in July. I can't wait for that one. You know, but seriously, it's Al Ewing that's writing that, so it actually might be pretty good because Al Ewing is a good writer, and hopefully, I mean, it can't be any worse than the last miniseries. So yeah, there's lots of great new Ghost Rider stuff coming in the next few months. And honestly, what I'm most excited about out of all that is that Marvel Comics Presents story with DK coming back. So
yes,
that hopefully will be really cool.
Definitely.
But all right, so we're going to go ahead and move on to our first review of the night. All right, first up we have Avengers number 14, The Fall of Castle Dracula, written by Jason Aaron with artwork by David Marquez. And the issue starts off with Castle Dracula in Romania on fire. It's being sacked by a group of vampires called the Legion of the Unliving, led by the Shadow Colonel. They are there to find and kill Dracula, but Dracula's coffin is empty. Meanwhile, all around the across the world, vampires are rising up and attempting to flee the Legion of the Unliving, and specifically flee Castle Dracula. Blade and Captain Marvel take out an airplane that's being hijacked by vampires. Black Panther and Iron Man destroy a tribe of Wakandan vampires underneath the Vibranium Mound that are attempting to steal the mineral. In Romania, on the outskirts of the flaming Castle Dracula, Captain America and Thor defend a church full of innocent humans that the fleeing vampires are trying to feed upon. Finally, in the monster metropolis underneath Manhattan, She-Hulk and Ghost Rider are taking out the rampaging vampires there, and Robbie is tossing vampires into hell through his trunk. But then he's approached by this little devil boy who can read his thoughts and knows his name. And he tells Robbie that he's a monster, the biggest hell damn monster there ever was or will be. And Robbie says, "I'm not a monster. I saved the world. I'm not a..." And She-Hulk interrupts. She doesn't see who Robbie's talking to. And she shoves him into the Hell Charger, picks it up, and throws it in a fireball special at the flying vampires. But Robbie's really disturbed by what the devil kid said to him. Back in Romania, the Shadow Colonel and his giant skull-faced dog, Sarge, surrender themselves to Captain America and Thor and are taken to the detention level of Avengers Mountain, where the Shadow Colonel is interrogated by Blade. And the other Avengers that are watching can tell that Shadow Colonel's trying to get a rise out of Blade, and he obviously wants to be there. And not only that, but the dog has disappeared. Down in the docks, the dock level, Robbie is kicking his car, and he says, "Talk, damn it, you stupid cursed car. Tell me what the hell I am. How did that kid know so much about me? Is it true what he said, that I'm a..." And he's interrupted by a voice that says, "Ghost Rider," when the lights go out. And then the voice invokes a spell that causes Robbie to catch on fire. And it says, "In the name of Mephisto, in the name of Zarathos and Zadkiel, in the name of Eli Morrow and whatever other masters you might be serving above or below, in the name of vengeance I invoke you." And it's the devil dog Sarge that's causing Robbie to transform into this monstrously demonic version of the Ghost Rider, just as the Shadow Colonel breaks free and says that all of the Avengers can go to hell, and I know just the way to get you there. Meanwhile, on the Russian-Ukrainian border, two of the Winter Guard, Darkstar and Red Guardian, find Dracula, who's old and withered, at the Russian border asking for asylum before he dies. And that is where this issue ends. So, Brian, what did you think of Avengers number 14?
I really liked Avengers 14. I know we've been reading the Avengers all along, and some of the issues we've really enjoyed, some of them not as much, but Avengers 14 I thought was really enjoyable for me. Starting off with, so it was by Jason Aaron, David Marquez. I think the art is firing on all cylinders, and I really feel that Jason Aaron's kind of getting into his own zone over here. You know, like he's really kind of hitting something special, at least to me. You know, I mean, I'm a sucker for some of the Dracula stuff anyway, and this ties into a civil war with the vampires and stuff like that. So I'm definitely digging what's been going on here. So starting with Blade at the start of the issue, we've had words about Blade in the past show being, you know, not really written well and kind of, you know, not too interesting. And what's he doing on certain teams where he can't help too much? I mean, let's just think of what happened during the Spirits of Vengeance miniseries
and Damnation.
Yeah, you know, he really didn't help too much. And Damnation as well. Here, however, I think he fits pretty well. The opening sequence with him is pretty badass. You know, I really enjoy his action scenes as well as some of his banter. He's exactly who I kind of imagined he would be like in this team setting, so I dig that a lot. I like the Tony Stark and Chala, how they differ on the vampire killings. down below. You know, it's like, you know, Tony Stark kind of sees it as, well, they're not human and it's okay. It's kind of sucks, but it is what it is. And Black Panther saying, no, these were human. Every death is a failure on me. So it's interesting that they're both teammates with kind of different outlooks on stuff. I like that a lot. I think this story arc is better than the opening couple issues of this Avengers run with the Celestials. I'm enjoying this a lot more. They just seem as a team to be gelling a lot better. Of course, those first issues were gathering them together 100%, but this is, I think they're working pretty well together. Captain America has that great sequence at the Romanian church. I love that sequence. Like, everything about that. The art, the facial expressions from the vampires. You know, he grabs the cross. He's ready to fight. He's just kicking butt. I really, really love that scene. You know, there's the Robbie scene where he sees the young boy, which may or may not be Mephisto, or definitely demonic in origin, and just kind of planting these little seeds of doubt in his mind, bringing up these things that we've been kind of worried about with him kind of turning dark side. So I thought that was really well done. And like I said about the facial expressions with Marquez, just really killing it. Some of my favorite artists these days are just the ones that can really nail the emotions, you know, because that really kind of enhances the story. More than even some of the action scenes. I love seeing some of the facial expressions. Now, the Hellhound, Sarge, is really interesting because I didn't think it was going to go this direction at all.
Yeah.
With him all of a sudden jumping through walls, disappearing. He's like a ghost dog. Tony Stark's freaked out, you know? And he's bringing forth this powered-up version of the Ghost Rider that it's further tying Robbie to some of the Spirits of Avengers we actually talked about in the earlier episodes. Zarathos and Zakiel, all these kind of elements of the lore, it's tying it further together. So I thought that was really interesting in how he just becomes this beast, kind of like, you know, kind of like how Felipe Smith was teasing a couple of years back,
yeah,
you know, like he
yeah.
was going to be transforming into this monstrous version of himself where he's just drooling fire and he can't even speak anymore. That was really awesome. So So I thought that whole scene was awesome. So overall, this book is great. It's not perfect, you know. I mean, some of the humor was so for me, but most of it landed pretty well. You know, the brain brewery or whatever. You know, like he says, is that what we're calling it now? Like all these kind of little gags. That stuff didn't really work for me, but that's not where I think this issue shines. I think this War of the Vampires thing was where it really shined. You know, and you have the Dracula reveal in the last panel, Grandpa Dracula. He looks exactly how you would think he would look, you know. And, you know, in a way, there might be some readers who actually feel a small pang of sympathy for him, saying that, you know, he's lost everything, and now yes, he was bad, but now he's begging for help. Or, if you're a little more suspicious of this Dark Lord, you go, okay, he's just playing everybody from the start. So I think both is pretty interesting, but that's my take on 14. What'd you think?
Okay, so I've been pretty critical of Jason Aaron's Avengers going forward. It has not been as good as I had hoped it was going to be. This right here, this has been the best issue of the series so far, by far. Like, I read this and I was like, this is what I would have been looking for out of this series. This is what I was hoping Jason Aaron would bring to this, because I didn't care about the Celestial stuff. I really didn't care about the Namor stuff. And of course, we skipped a few issues in our reviews because Robbie Reyes didn't really have much of a presence outside of just a little page here or there in issues. What was it? 11, 12, and then 13 was the Iron Fist flashback. So we didn't even bother covering those. But this is really, really good. I'm glad that we stuck with this series, to be honest, because I was ready to just give up on it, especially after the last couple issues didn't really feature Robbie much. He gets thrown back into the spotlight in this, because really, the stars of it are him and Blade. And you're absolutely right. Blade, this shows how cool Blade can be when he's done well, and he's done in a story that's appropriate for him. Because he's killing vampires. I mean, that's what Blade does. He kills vampires. And it shows him doing a damn good job. He's not fighting angels or, you know, Ghost Rider possessed Black Panthers. You know, he's actually fighting vampires. Yeah. And it shows that he is really the best at doing that. A lot of these scenes, like you're talking about Captain America in the church. I like where he's getting everybody in the church, and like the priest says, truly God is watching over us. And Captain America says, yes, ma'am, he is. And shows Thor up there frying him with lightning.
Yep.
it's just, I think this comic is perfect. Like, this is exactly what I am looking for in a series that features a Ghost Rider as one of the team members. You get the part with Monster Metropolis, and I hadn't thought, you know, I had been thinking the little demon boy. On the first time I read this, I thought, like, okay, that based on what happens at the end, that must be Sarge in another form. But it's not, because Sarge is in Romania. So that's not, it can't be who it is that's talking to him. And it didn't click with me until you said it, that I bet it's Mephisto. Because he says, I know all the writers' names, going back to the very first, the little ghost in the snow. And, you know, you see Mephisto is the one that gave Ghost, the prehistoric Ghost Rider, his power. But it begs the question of how Mephisto got out of the hell casino that he's imprisoned with from Damnation. But I guess that's probably going to be part of the whole challenge of the Ghost Rider story arc. But yeah, everything about this, like, you've got the villains, you've got the Shadow Colonel and his interrogation with Blade, and it's just so good. You know, even the humor, like you said, you thought some of it fell flat. I think it's great. Like, you get the part where Tony Stark's on the intercom and he says, "I just saw a dog that growled at me and disappeared into the walls. Is Ghost Dog a thing we're supposed to have now and nobody told me?" Because the other day I saw a talking gorilla in the showers. And it's great. But then the best part was, you know, where Sarge, he comes and he triggers Robbie's transformation. And I love how he says, "In the name of Mephisto, Marduk the Morning Star, Zarathos, Zadkiel, Eli Morrow," he names off all of the origin story characters for all the different Ghost Riders. Because you got Mephisto, then Marduk the Morning Star, that's Lucifer, then Zarathos, Zadkiel, Eli Morrow. He's really tying everything together. And that splash page where he bursts into flames in his demonic form and Sarge says, "Now get in and start the damn car." It's really, really great. I was not this excited to read another issue of Avengers than I was after I read this one. I think it's fantastic. So you ready to move on to 15?
Let's do it.
All right. Next is Avengers number 15. Again, written by Jason Aaron with artwork by David Marquez. And this one is titled "The Battle for the Throne of the Damned." So while the Shadow Colonel attempts to escape his cell in Avengers Mountain, taking on Blade and Captain Marvel, Sarge the Hellhound teleports in to attack Captain America and Black Panther. Just then, the wall explodes and the demonically transformed Ghost Rider is there with his Hell Charger. And he blows Captain Marvel aside, and he escapes in the Hell Charger with the Shadow Colonel and Sarge riding shotgun. And all the while, Robbie is narrating, saying things like, "My name is Robbie Reyes, and I'm screaming, screaming and screaming and screaming. So much screaming, it feels like my throat is on fire. But for some reason, no one can hear me. Why am I screaming? I can't seem to remember anymore. I just remember burning and melting and someone yelling weird names at me and oh, all right, now I remember. There was a talking dog. The dog's words made me scream, made me lose myself in fire, lose myself even more than usual. I'm not sure where I am right now. I just know it hurts like hell. It feels like I'm being born again, tearing my way out of my mother's belly, screaming and bawling and spitting up hellfire. And God help me, the worst part is, even through all the agony, it feels so damn good." Later, the Avengers are in Avengers Mountain, and they've lost the Hell Charger, and they've also learned that Dracula has reappeared in Russia. He's being held in a prison. Iron Man, in his stealth armor, goes to see Dracula, and they have a very tense conversation where Iron Man's finally like, "Well, I'm just going to take you out of here." And Dracula says, "No, you're not, because you're going to be preoccupied with the riot." The prison explodes in a riot, and Crimson Dynamo and Iron Man team up reluctantly to stop the rioting prisoners. Meanwhile, in Madripoor, a group of vampires are murdered by the Legion of the Unliving. And we get their introductions. There's the Rat Bomber, who controls rats fitted with sunlight grenades. There's Snow Snake and the Carpathian. Lady Cromwell, the Baroness Blood, who's a vampire Nazi. Sarge the Hellhound and the Shadow Colonel, who uses a tiny version of the Man Thing called, he calls the Boy Thing, to supply him with an endless amount of wooden stakes that he fires through his minigun. They blow their way, him and the Ghost Rider blow their way through a vault, vault door, where they find a bunch of vampire children. And he orders Robbie to burn them alive. Instead, he just burns the walls above them and tells a Shadow Colonel no. So, in order to take this defiance out, the Shadow Colonel starts invoking some spells. This is Zarathos, Zacharum, Invictus, which causes Robbie to collapse in pain. But then the Avengers arrive, and the Shadow Colonel says, "Change of plans, Ryder. You don't want to murder a bunch of vampire children? Fine. Mephistopheles Vindicta. You can kill the Avengers instead." And Robbie charges at Thor, Captain America, Captain Marvel, and Blade. And that is where this issue ends. So, all right, Avengers number 15. What did you think of this one?
So I really enjoyed Avengers 15 as well. This is a little more of the same how I felt about the last one. It's really kind of gaining momentum for me at this point. Ghost Rider is a serious threat now at this point. You know, in a way, he kind of reminds me of the 90s Vengeance a little bit, you know, where he's kind of this...
Absolutely.
You know, this monstrous version. Like, if you thought Ghost Rider couldn't get more terrifying as a powered-up individual, now it's even scarier. I mean, like, he's massive now. So I thought that was really awesome. You know, I actually enjoyed the Tony Stark and the Dracula conversation, you know, the kind of back and forth, you know, a little bit of banter, you know, I keep forgetting that they're saying that Tony Stark is an adopted, person now. So I'm like, you know, I forgot about some of these little elements that's part of the Marvel Universe that I hadn't been keeping up with. I had to remember
about that,
you know, like, so he was adopted by Howard when he was a kid, which is fine, but I'm like, oh, okay. It kind of reminded me of some of that, but that was totally fine. I really enjoyed Ghost Rider's, he's fighting the urge to kill the vampire children, whether or not they deserved it. You know, it's like you'd think he's destroying them, and then they cut back, and he's shooting his fire over them, and he's not killing them and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty good. Overall, I really enjoyed this one. I mean, I'm keeping this review brief. Also, it had another great cliffhanger at the end, too. So I think overall, it was a pretty good story. And now I want to know what you thought.
Well, I think this one continues along just along the same lines as 14. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Mm-hmm.
One of the only problems I had with it is the Shadow Colonel gets a lot of great characterization. And Sarge, the same. But you have the rest of this Legion of the Unliving, who are nothing more than cool names and cool designs.
Yeah.
With nothing else about them. Like, you've got Snow Snake and the Carpathian and mm-hmm. Baroness Blood. They're just sort of bodies. And the one that has the rats that explode.
Yeah.
Like, they're just concepts.
Yeah.
You know, they're not characters. They're just things for the Avengers to be shown fighting in the background.
Yeah.
But I did like the thing with the boy thing. The little tiny man thing that's on the Shadow Colonel's shoulder that feeds him a continuous supply of wooden stakes into his minigun.
Yeah.
That is such a great idea. That is very, very cool. but yeah, the fact that Robbie, the narration he has through this is great. Where he's talking about burning and burning, and, you know, he can hear his own skull sizzling. Everything is so quiet. And he's still trying to exert that control.
Yeah.
To where he won't kill the vampire children. I think is all really, really great. And I love the spells that the Shadow Colonel's using to keep Robbie in line.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, where did he learn these spells to control a Ghost Rider? But I like it, you know, Mephistopheles Vindicta. That's what he says to get him to fight the Avengers at the end. It's all these really cool touches. Now, Sonus, if you said you enjoyed the conversation between Dracula and Tony Stark, to me, that and the whole riot in the prison, That didn't grab me as much. I was like, okay, let's get this over with and get back to the vampires and, you know, Ghost Rider and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I will say, I think the best panel, the best page in it is when Robbie is escaping Avengers Mountain with, in the Hell Charger.
Yeah.
And Sarge has his head stuck out the window.
Yeah.
You know, like a dog would, you know, even though he's a dog from hell, he's still a dog. So, but yeah, I'm so much enjoying this Avengers arc. Like, still, it's so much better than what's coming for. And I've not mentioned David Marquez's artwork. I didn't when we reviewed 14, but it's great. It's better than when he was on the book for the Namor arc. There's no weird, like, oh, they can talk underwater and all this other stuff. All the problems I had with his artwork in that first arc are gone here. Mm. The artwork is fantastic. I love his demonic Ghost Rider, the massive hell beast version of him. It just looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And the colors in this. Oh my God. Who's the colorist? The colorist is Eric Arciniega. Mm-hmm. I think I'm pronouncing that right. The colors just pop off this thing.
Mm.
They look fantastic. All the fire that, like, every panel that Robbie's in has this fiery background to it. Like, the heat is just coming off of him at all times. And it looks fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
If you're a comic reader, if you're a Ghost Rider fan, and you've not been wanting to pick up Avengers, especially because we gave it some kind of so-so reviews in the past, definitely pick up this arc that started with issue number 14. And I don't think you'll be disappointed. It is very, very good.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to a pair of classic comic reviews.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is Ghost Rider 2099, number 13, from May of 1995, titled Fables of the Reconstruction, written by Lem Kaminsky, with artwork by a new artist, Graham Higgins, who will be the artist on this two-issue tie-in to the One Nation Under Doom event that all of the 2099 titles were participating in at this time. So at the end of the last issue, Ghost Rider Zero Cochrane was completely blown into pieces and destroyed by a police ninja named Coda. This issue picks up with two trash collectors picking up debris from the street, and in amongst the debris is the wrecked Ghost Rider body, which is slowly starting to rebuild itself and put itself back together. In the meantime, since Ghost Rider's destruction, Dr. Doom has taken over the government of the United States of America and instated himself as president and completely taken control over the country. While Ghost Rider is rebuilding, he has a bunch of nanobots that are reassembling his circuitry and all of that. Transverse City, all this stuff's going on around, including a meeting of a group of young hackers, including Dr. Neon, they're discussing how Doom was able to hack the White House and essentially take over. They're talking in the barcode, which is also being frequented by Kylie, Gagarin, Zero's ex-girlfriend, who is still struggling with the idea that Zero may be the Ghost Rider. While all this is going on and Zero continues to rebuild, Doom himself comes to Transverse City and pays a visit to Dyson Kellerman, the holographic CEO of Demonix, who is outraged at what Doom is doing to undo all the work that Demonix had done to bring order to the world in subtle and manipulative ways. Doom goes into the basement of Demonix, where he opens a chamber that contains the preserved cybernetic brain of Kellerman. And this is how Kellerman survives. He's just a disembodied brain that lives on in computer systems as a hologram. He inserts a chip into Kellerman's brain that makes Kellerman Doom's slave. And Doom tells him that First and foremost, you shall immediately cease your propaganda campaign against the being known as the Ghost Rider. I have very specific plans for him, which I do not want interfered with. And if you may, if you wish, take comfort from the fact he will have no more choice in the matter than you do. So Ghost Rider's body manages to rebuild itself in an alleyway. And then the CPU comes back on. And it says, core memory intact, repairing integrity of application zero Cochrane, rebooting all systems. While this is going on, Anesthesia Jones, the owner of the barcode, attends an online meeting of the Undernet, which is a group of radical hackers that are dedicated to social change. And they're trying to figure out what they're going to do about Dr. Doom's takeover. They're sitting in this really cool, like, virtual cafe, and they all have very distinct avatars. There's one named Cracker Jack. There's one named Cabal. One other one named Ada. One named Reptilicus. And they're all very cool. While they are meeting, they are unaware that they are being observed by the Ghostworks, who were visited by Doom at the end of the last issue. And they predict that Doom's actions have delayed the collapse of human civilization by 3.7 years from their original calculations. And they argue amongst themselves that while they've compromised control over their experimental subject, will only advance their own agenda. While they're discussing this, a tiny little shadowy figure manages to go to a port and escape their digital realm and flee into the internet. And then Zero wakes up as a Ghost Rider, and the last thing he remembers is being destroyed. And he realizes that he's full of molecular nanotech, which can essentially rebuild him from anything. And he looks up and he sees a giant floating billboard that has a holographic projection of Doom. And he says, what the shock is that? Don't know how long I was doing downtime, but I must have missed something. And that is where this issue ends.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, what did you think of Ghost Rider 2099, number 13?
So this is sort of the start of a new status quo for Zero Cochrane. You know, that the last issue, he was, I was surprised at how decimated he was by the end of it. He was totally destroyed. And it was Coda, right?
Yeah, Coda. It was
like he just owned him, you know, which was a shock to me as a reader, because you're going through 12 issues of him being a badass and him being able to do X, Y, and Z as abilities, and suddenly he's getting destroyed. And so now he's just a bunch of parts, you know? So this opens up, it's kind of a whole new era of Ghost Rider 2099. It's not as strong as the first half of the series, you know, but at this part so far, I don't mind it as much. You know, this is kind of the One Nation Under Doom storyline, which I was sort of unfamiliar with. So, I mean, I imagine Dr. Doom has become the president, right?
In this,
at this point, yeah.
All the 2099 titles at the time had to tie into the fact that Doom now controlled the United States. And every 2099 book had a change of status quo. Like, I think the Punisher became like his, like the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. under Doom. And
yeah,
like one of the, like, I think maybe like the Hulk or something got hunted by Doom and was eventually killed or something like that. I think I've read the Punisher's 2099 series, but I didn't read any of the others other than Ghost Rider.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of went along with Kaminsky's, you know, his storyline. I just kind of, like I said, just went along with that. You know, Doom is now the guy in charge, and so now they can put some political satire in there. And shockingly, Dr. Doom being so overt of a character, it's more nuanced than some of the stuff you see nowadays with the way comics are, where it just beats you over the head with one side or another. So it's interesting, and so you know, you have, it opens up with the guys cleaning up after this disaster. You know, you see them cleaning up some of the Ghost Rider pieces and stuff like that, and it's like they're just kind of commenting on, oh yeah, this whole thing. And there's a moment where I think Dr. Doom or the ad or whatever that's featuring him says "Morning in America," and that was famously 1984 a political commercial with Ronald Reagan's campaign way back when. So it's kind of a little touchback to how things were back in the mid-80s with how campaigns were and how people kind of got swept up in that whole thing. So with Kylie, you know, it's really interesting with Kylie because it's this whole, like, you know, does she love him? Does she miss him? This whole thing with Zero Cochran. So, she, you know, she says she cares about nothing, zip, nada, zero, you know, kind of thing. So there's a little wordplay there, but I thought that was pretty well done. She's obviously thinking about him a lot. You know, his absence is, you know, kind of affecting her. So I definitely enjoyed the parallel action of Zero's parts kind of coming together and some of the narration about this new world order, essentially. But Doom has plans for Ghost Rider, and what they are exactly, we don't quite know, but that's enough to keep me intrigued for this issue, for sure. Nice cliffhanger, I think. You know, Zero is almost a fish out of water by the end of it, you know, which is, you know, it's kind of like his world, but he's like, wow, something, like, how long was I out for, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, it's totally different. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I wish there was a little more setup for the One Nation Under Doom thing. Someone who's reading it, like, nowadays, like, looking back, you know, there was no, like, if you're just reading the Ghost Rider 2099, there's not a lot of, okay, well, last issue, it was one way, this issue, things are totally shaken up completely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's obviously, for me, it was a bit of a leap, but that's okay. I just think that's a little tough for new readers, but it's not the end of the world. I enjoyed this one quite a bit. So, what'd you think?
This one, yeah, you know, I think you hit that nail on the head when you said the second half of the Ghost Rider 2099 run is nowhere near as strong as the first half. And this is where the transition really starts. I do appreciate the fact that because Zero is out of commission throughout the entire issue, we get pretty much just a total focus on Transverse City, which in past issues has been the best, one of the best parts about Kaminsky's writing is this world building Transverse. And this continues that, and I really appreciate it. But you're also starting to get really deep into, like, you've got the group of hackers that are with Dr. Neon, and you've got the stuff with the Undernet, and it's almost like the book is losing its focus. It's starting to spin out into all these other things. You've got the Ghostworks, the Undernet, the hackers, Doom, Demonics. And even though Ghost Rider is an afterthought in this, and I'm afraid it's been a long time since I've read the rest of the series going forward from here, but I'm afraid this is almost how the rest of the series is, where Ghost Rider himself is kind of pushed to the background, to where he's the least important thing that's going on in favor of all these other things.
Right.
And it really the lack of focus, there's too many balls juggling in the air for this issue.
Yeah.
I like that he's taking the time to go through all of Transverse City, but this issue is like, it does nothing but introduce subplots that'll be going on for the rest of the series. Like, you've got the part with the Ghostworks, and you've got the little shadow guy that escapes into the port, and you see him disappear, and you're wondering, like, well, what the fuck was that about? That doesn't get resolved until the last issue. Like, he's really, with this issue, he's planning his long-term end game. Mm-hmm. Which is cool, but it also doesn't really give much in the way of a story for this one issue. There are good things about it. Like, I like the part when Zero wakes up and he's like, what? I'm full of nanotech? And like, what? Holy glitch. What the shock is that? Looking at that, the Doom's thing in the sky. He's like, I must have missed something. And it's good. And I like how it parallels everything that's going on with Ghost Rider's repair. But it's not terribly interesting.
Yeah.
This has been my least favorite issue of this series so far. And that's not really saying much, because every issue before this has been fantastic. This is not bad. It's just, it doesn't grab you in the same way that the previous 12 issues did.
And can I say something?
Yeah.
I've kind of been amazed at the level of quality that's been consistent throughout. You know, it's like, think of, like, even comics nowadays, it's tough to find a 12-issue series what has every issue is pretty much A plus, A minus kind of quality, where it's like, for the most part, it's straight up killing it with the art, the art teams, the writing, the world building. Like you said, like this was not just like you plop in a Spider-Man character. Like this is like building this whole part of 2099 that I think is equally interesting as well as different from, say, Miguel O'Hara's New York City of 2099.
Yeah, you know,
it's that kind of. So I'm really, it's almost like shockingly so how good it was up until this point. And I totally agree with you about the whole, he's not as important from now on. Like, he's kind of like, he's just there.
Yeah.
He, in a way, Chris, he's kind of like how Batman used to be in some of his Batman movies. You know, it was always about the villain. It was always about the world around him. Batman was just this guy in the background in a suit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, so I could totally see that. But yeah, it's, I think this is just kind of the beginning of the end, unfortunately.
Now, I will say, to me, the one part of this that I really disliked was the artwork.
Interesting.
Graham Higgins' artwork. I liked his like the splash page of Ghost Rider's destroyed body and the way he depicts him being put back together. But the character work in it, I don't know, like the characters, they look, God, I don't even know how to describe it. Like Dr. Doom, maybe this is how he looked in the Doom 2099 series. I don't know because I've never read it. But like his faceplate is just flat against his face, and there's like he has he must have no nose, you know. Otherwise, it's just squished down. But I just the artwork, everything looks so blocky, and when you're used to the stuff from Kyle Hoetz and Mark Buckingham and Chris Bachalo, like you look at his final drawing of Ghost Rider on the second to last page, it looks. I don't know. It just looks off to me. Like, everything looks flat. Like, there's no texture to anything. Mm-hmm. There's no dimension to it. It's just flat images. And, yeah, I realize that it is just a flat image. But still, it shouldn't look like a cardboard cutout.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan of Graham Higgins. I know he does this issue and the next issue. And I don't know what else he's done in the past. I don't think I've ever come across his art elsewhere, but it just didn't do anything for me. I do love the cover.
But then soon, right. Yeah, me too. And soon after this, Ashley Wood takes over, right?
Ashley Wood comes in with issue 15, yeah.
And that's a love-hate relationship too, because some fans love Ashley Wood stuff, and some fans say, like, I don't know what's going on. It just blobs everywhere, you know? So it's, things will change quite a bit very, very soon. So, yeah.
Well, we've got one more issue of the Graham Higgins little One Nation Under Doom arc. And then, like you said, we'll move into the Ashley Wood era that'll take the series through the end. But, all right, you got anything more to say about this one?
No, man, let's do it.
All right, so moving on to our last review of the night. Okay, Ghost Rider number 13 from 1975, written by Tony Isabella, with artwork by George Tuska and Vince Coletta. The title is "You've Got a Second Chance, Johnny Blaze," and hold on, guys, listeners, because this is a this one's a doozy. So at the end of issue number 12, the Phantom Eagle, the ghost World War I pilot, had his revenge on the old man that had murdered him, leaving Johnny Blaze as the Ghost Rider and the old man's grandson Joel there to sort of pick up the pieces. And Joel turns around and he says, "Oh my God, your face, it's like a blazing skull." And Johnny then suddenly transforms from Ghost Rider back into Johnny. And the guy's like, "For a bit, you look like death warmed over. I guess the smoke must have gotten in my eyes." And then he runs off realizing that his hangar is on, and house is on fire. And it's got this perfect little three-page sequence where Johnny's thinking to himself, he looks up at the moon and he says, "It's still night, right?" He touches his face. "And I turn into the Ghost Rider every night, all night, right? Has somebody slipped me some loco weed?" It's great. He finds a mirror on a truck and sees it. He's not the Ghost Rider, even though he's supposed to be the Ghost Rider every night, all night. He starts thinking about how he was saved by the friend from Satan. And then Roxanne Simpson leaves him. He fights the Hulk, he teams up with the Thing, and he fights the Phantom Eagle. And it says, "Those were the only three times you've ever used your powers to help others, and it felt real good." And he makes this really, really leap of faith, this intuitive leap, where he says, "I didn't do much Bible reading when I was a kid, but those three times I helped other folks was just a mite easier to cut out. Could they have been three temptations? Could all have been some kind of test? But if I passed it, then that means that's it. I passed the test, Satan. Do you hear me? I'm free of you forever. That's a pretty big assumption to make there, Johnny. But anyway, okay. So he decides that he really should tell Roxanne, but he doesn't have any way of finding her. He'll make it really easy for her to find him when she's ready to come back. So he goes to a payphone and he tries to call the stuntmaster, wanting to get a job as a stuntman on his TV show. And he calls the operator. Is this operator? I'd like to make a collect call to the stuntmaster in Los Angeles. And that, of course, this dates it. But she says, the stuntmaster, huh? Gee, I'm sorry. His line is busy. Would you like to speak to John Boy instead? So Johnny decides that he's just going to have to ride out to Hollywood and go to the studio and meet stuntmaster there. And he gets his skull cycle and rides off. And then, okay, the next page has the most baffling narrative series of narration that I think I've ever read in a Ghost Rider comic. And it says, I gotta recite this. The Sunset Strip may be remembered as the street where Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., mustn't forget the Jr., hung out before he went straight and joined the FBI. Some of us have never forgiven him for that. In those days, the Strip stood for all the action and excitement the Warner Brothers could squeeze into an hour. That was fiction. The reality is just as exciting. The Strip is alive, baby. Los Angeles is alive, too, and giving. Johnny Blaze is going to take what this city has to offer. This is a beginning for him. Send all further inquiries care of that little city within a city, Hollywood. What the fuck that's all about, I have no idea. I guess as a product of the time, because, wow, Isabella, that's, whoo. Okay, so he rides to Delazny Studios, where he jumps over the fence after the security guard won't let him in, and he meets up with Stuntmaster, who introduces Johnny to the show's co-star, Karen Page, who was, of course, Matt Murdock, Daredevil's secretary and girlfriend, who since moved to Hollywood to become an actress. Unfortunately, that her acting days won't be very kind to Karen once Frank Miller gets a hold of her. But that's neither here nor there. He also meets the director of the Stuntmaster show, Coot Collier. And they hire Johnny as a stuntman. And the first stunt, it also introduces Johnny to Katie Milner, who is Karen's stunt woman. Who Stuntmaster says, of course, the more dangerous the stunt, the more she gets paid. And she's trying to put a kid brother through medical school. So Katie Milner has a kid brother. That's going to come up. That's going to be important later. So Karen's walking off thinking about Johnny Blaze and Stuntmaster and Matt Murdock when she is kidnapped by the Trapster, who flies by on this giant silent flying disc thing, who says there's a $1 million bounty on Karen Page and he's going to collect it. Johnny goes running for his motorcycle and finds himself transforming into the Ghost Rider in the middle of the day. And this surprises him because, of course, he thought he was free of the curse for good. But it's just changed. Now, instead of turning at night, Johnny will turn into the Ghost Rider whenever there is danger present. But he grabs his bike and he rides off after the Trapster onto a Hollywood backlot where there's a bunch of replicas of famous monuments. And he drives up one modeled after the St. Louis Gateway Arch and manages to blast the Trapster's disc to the ground. Johnny goes into his spook routine, and it's great. For the first time, someone actually believes Johnny's a ghost, and it freaks Trapster the fuck out. He's like, what are you? And the Trapster, you know, he fights Johnny for a little bit, but it's still, the fight doesn't last very long. Johnny blasts his flying anti-gravity thing with Hellfire and sends him careening out of control like a balloon that's losing its air. By the time the cops catch him, he'll be glad to go back to jail. And then Johnny, once the danger's passed, finds himself turning back into his normal face. And he says, well, that's the new angle. Maybe I'm going to turn into the Ghost Rider whenever there's danger around. Guess I'll just have to wait and see. He goes and he frees Karen of the paste stuff that she'd been gooed down with. And she says, oh, Johnny, I saw you change back there. How did you do it? He says, mirrors. Oh. And she says, I always did ask too many questions anyway. Thanks. And kisses him right on the lips. And that is where this crazy comic ends. Brian, what did you think of You've Got a Second Chance, Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider number 13?
Okay, so we can like something with also realizing that it might not be the best of something. So for me, like I was enjoying this one, and I'm not sure if other fans dislike this one or not. You know, it's obviously come at a interesting time period of the character because, you know, he's pivoting towards more superheroics rather than the darker horror stuff. And I mean, even if you look at some of the letters to the editor at the end, it's like, you know, some fans are embracing that and some fans are going, this is ridiculous, and so on. And even with the whole friend, the mysterious friend thing, divided people right down the middle, you know. Yeah. In the letters to the editor, I just gotta say, I was reading through and I was cracking up because some people were like, this is so ridiculous. Why would you bring in a religious figure to be a deus ex machina to save Johnny Blaze? And the next person would be like, thank God, literally, that Jesus is saving Johnny Blaze. Who else? So it's really funny how it's kind of divided fans, but you know, like it or hate it, you know, people were talking about it. You know what I mean? So something is up with Isabella's thing. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, if you weren't getting no reaction, then that's like the worst thing you get. You know, at least people are kind of interacting with it. I like this one. You know, it's so we just came from a kind of a bizarre issue with the Phantom Eagle and that whole old timer riding his airplane and trying to blast the ghost out of the sky. Real kind of weird stuff. And I sort of felt bad because they recapped poor, what's his name? The Joel, the grandson, at the start of this one, just like at the end of the last one. Like this poor guy, he's still crying, he's still upset. You know, it's the same moment in time. But his grandfather just died. And like Blaze just kind of like, you know, he goes to comfort him, first of all, as a flaming skull man.
Yeah.
Which is hysterical because, I mean, that just cracks me up a lot. You know, he's like, sorry. But then he transforms to Johnny Blaze. And that's the first time that he's been able to, while at night, to transform back to human when evil is no longer present or there's no villainy around kind of thing, where he's like, what? This is kind of interesting. So this is kind of whether you like this issue or hate it, it's kind of a turning point for the character. You know, he's acknowledging in flashback the times where he was able to help people, and he identified, I think, three examples where he was able to help people. And it kind of made me laugh. I'm like, we've been reading this guy for like 4 years now. He's like, oh, those three
times.
Yeah,
he's helped people three times. People. Yeah.
Wow. What a hero.
Well, you remember he was going to let Las Vegas burn to the ground because they were calling him a cycle bum. So
I know. Crazy. But yeah, dare I say it, the word hero, you know what I mean? So that's what I wrote. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, some people really relish in the Marvel horror roots that this story began. And there are other fans, I mean, kind of like me a little bit, where I'm embracing his inclusion to the wider picture and meeting people like Hulk, like Spidey, like all these people where it's kind of opening the door, giving him a little more of visibility, you know, but I could totally see the other side of it too. I like the continuity callbacks. I know we joke around and be like, every issue is just like, hey, remember I did this, you know, over and over again. Yeah. So I don't mind the continuity callbacks, partly because the way our recording schedule is, it reminds me as a reader,
sure, yeah,
what it was like. There's a moment where Johnny Blaze is talking to the security guards outside Delazny Studios in Hollywood, and it's simultaneously dumb but awesome. Yeah. It's like it's a part where he's, you know, they're like, yeah, you want to talk to Stunt Master? Get the hell out of here, buddy. You know, and then it's so silly where he's like, oh, I'll show them. And he hops on his bike and he rides over the thing and they can't believe it. And they just like kind of let it
happen. They let him go. Yeah.
They let it go. He goes from cycle tramp to employee within 12 seconds, I think, you know, once he gets in, Stomach's, hey, JB, what's up? You know, and I like their banter at this point. It was pretty funny. But yeah, he goes from being a nobody to now he's already doing stunts within like minutes, you know, which I think is hysterical. You know, so that was interesting. You know, Karen Page, she thinks that Johnny Blaze doesn't spend his knife as a vigilante, just like the other man in her life, you know, Matt Murdock. So, I thought that was kind of funny. And actually, I really liked the Johnny Blaze transformation in this issue, with the way it was illustrated, with him kind of, you know, going against the wall and his face kind of changing. Yeah. You know, just very well done by George Tuska. So I thought that was very good. What's interesting about this is that compare this moment of Ghost Rider history to much later on where he becomes like overpowered. But there are moments in these early issues where he's vulnerable to attacks. Like he's using his psycho skills to dodge out of the way of blasts and, you know, trapster bolts and stuff like that. And he's like using his abilities to avoid that stuff. I mean, like, you kind of compare that to how he is much later, and you could hit him with a freight train and you can't stop the Ghost Rider because he's a spirit of vengeance. You know what I mean? So there's something to be said about that, where in a way you're like, you kind of like worry about him a little bit, which is really interesting, you know? But yeah, I think overall I think it's kind of a goofy issue, but I enjoyed myself while reading it. There are a few moments that are kind of a little silly, you know, where you know, he says, I'm free forever, Satan. And that's a little cheesy, you know, it's like, and you kind of see the devil in the background going, I'll get you. Stuff like that. You know what I mean? I did laugh how he has to, you know, he's looking for Stuntmaster in the payphone. He's like using 1010321. He's like calling collect. He's like, last name Master.
Yeah. First name Stunt.
First name Stunt. You know, like, so that was kind of funny. Most of the art is pretty good here, but the skull cycle, and I think a lot of artists have trouble drawing this version of the skull cycle. It just, for me, never looks right because the front forks or the front skull thing just looks way too big and the wheel looks too small. And it's weird because that's what they made one of the action figures with years ago, the Marvel Legends figures, you know? So I've really come to like that design a lot, but it just doesn't work. It just kind of looks like a, like, I don't know, like a big wheel or some weird thing that's not a motorcycle, you know?
I never liked the skull cycle. I always thought it looked dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, dumb. I never dug it.
And, you know, he only had it for a few issues or a few, like, or 6 months or a year or something.
Yeah, they
like that,
had
right?
about
like,
not, a year. Yeah, he lost it like, in not, issue 23, I think, is when it... Or, yeah,
wow,
24.
Good memory.
Yeah, 24. So, yeah, that's when the skull cycle goes away.
Did he have it in Champions?
Yeah,
Chris?
He had it in Champions.
Okay, yeah. I thought so. But yeah, it's not around for terribly long. Ironically, a lot of the early merchandise, which wasn't a ton, was all Skull Cycle stuff with him. You know, there's a couple little, I don't know if it was Remco or one of those other toy companies, they made like Skull Cycle versions of his stuff. So it's just kind of funny that that became linked to him right from the start. And, you know, I gotta laugh at the Trapster. I don't know if this is like, if he's a scary villain or what, but, you know, he called himself the All-New Trapster, which is just... It just is adorable. I'm the all-new Trapster, you know?
He used to be Paste Pot Pete. That was his name.
Okay.
Paste
that
Pot
was his
Pete.
Thing?
Yeah. Yeah, yep. He fought the Fantastic Four. And yeah. He was part of the Frightful Four. Yeah. He was part of the Frightful Four. And yeah, he was Paste Pot Pete. And I think, I don't know, maybe this is the first issue where he called himself the Trapster. But yeah, this dude is a joke. This dude has always been a joke. From what I remember anyway.
I mean, Triple P, you know what I mean? It's just like... It's just one of those things where, you know, he just seems like kind of a dork, but, you know, and there's a part where Johnny is trying to save them or trying to save Karen from his clutches, and he, like, knocks them out of the sky. He doesn't catch them, and they fall. She lands right on her ass. It's like the way it's illustrated, she's like, boom! Right on her hips, the poor girl. So I'm like, holy moly, she's... Even Daredevil would have caught her at that point, you know?
And, like, Johnny says, ooh, they're gonna feel that landing for a couple of days.
Yeah, nice job, buddy. You know,
Johnny's
so
not a very good superhero. He's terrible at it.
He's just starting. You know, he's only helped three people. Yeah. He's still only helped three people at this point. But yeah, so overall, I mean, I think it's a harmless issue. It's not offensive to me. It's not, I mean, it's silly, but I had a smile on my face while I was reading it. Now I want to know what you thought.
I really love this issue because it's dumb, but it's fun. Tony Isabella has sort of dug this book out of the hole that it got into with all the Satan stuff. And you can tell this, with this issue, he's finally made this book his own. He's brought in his own supporting cast. He's changed the Ghost Rider status quo, and he's got him fighting supervillains. And this is where the superhero phase of Ghost Rider, of Johnny Blaze, really starts. I love the supporting cast that he brings in. Stuntmaster and Coot Collier, the director, and Katie Milner, the stunt actress, who later, it turns out she's actually Roxanne Simpson.
Right, which is really crazy.
Weird. Karen Page, I think they just stuck her in there because she wasn't in Daredevil anymore and they knew she was an actress. So, like, well, might as well. But some of the choices that Isabella makes when writing this, you know, the thing where Johnny just assumes that me helping these three people are just like, I'm just like Job, you know, from the Bible, you know. So that's obviously what it must be.
Right.
It couldn't be anything else. And then what is up with the narration boxes when Johnny gets to Hollywood, where he's talking about like Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. and the Sunset Strip, and you know, like, I don't know what. Maybe it's because you're not from this time. You know, I was even born by this point. You know, so, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And it seems so.
I know, and I think with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. I mean, I think he was an actor, right? But you know, I knew him from Batman the Animated Series because he used to do the voice of Alfred in Batman the Animated Series.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I don't know what Blaze is referencing at this point. So I mean, I didn't get a chance. Sometimes I research it, but I didn't get a chance to go back to it. It does kind of date the issue right away. You know what I mean?
And it's not Blaze that's saying it. It's this omniscient narrator
who goes off on
a rant about Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. I didn't know he was the voice of Alfred on Batman the Animated Series. You know, I can hear his voice.
I could be mistaken, but
But it's so weird. And you've got the Trapster. And the best part of this issue, the best part is Johnny Blaze's spook routine actually works for the first time. And it scares the shit out of the Trapster.
Well, he's had a lot of practice.
He's like, what are you? Are you a ghost? He's like, what? It actually worked. But yeah, I mean, it's... And what is up? Okay, the end, you know. So, the first conversation Karen Page had with Johnny Blaze, he's like, how did you, I saw you change back there. How did you do it? Johnny says, mirrors. She says, oh, well, okay. And then she kisses him. Like, she accepts a lot, doesn't she? I guess when her ex-boyfriend's Daredevil, you know, that sort of comes with the territory.
Well, you know, and to be fair, Joel, the start of the issue, thought that it was like something else too. Like, he thought
smoke
it was just
smoke
in his eyes. So maybe just everyone back then was just really stupid, and you know, but everyone's just falling for it. And I don't know. It's too funny.
And I really like the artwork. George Tuska comes in as the artist for the next couple of issues, and I actually really enjoy his work. He does some work on the Champions too. It really. It fits the superhero stuff while still keeping that sort of edge to it that, like, Jim Mooney stuff and Tom Sutton stuff had. I think it works really well. He does great with the action. I like his transformation sequences. I think he does a really good job. All in all, I think this is one of the better issues of the 70s series so far. I think it's great. It's just, you really have to forgive a lot. You have to just sort of roll with it. Because this, like you say, he just comes in and he's a stuntman just like that. Like, Stuntmaster's like, oh, hey, here you go. Do this stunt. And he's hired. And you really have to just forgive. Like, okay, this is what's happening. Don't nitpick it. Just go with it. And it works. It really does. I think this is just a lot of fun. And the rest of Isabella's run, while he's in Hollywood, is a lot of fun. The series is going to be really good for the next like 6-7 issues.
it gives Blaze something to kind of do, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
And to the chagrin of probably older fans who were like, you know what, it was, you know, it's a dark character and dark origins, and you really can't get any more heavy with some of that origin of his character compared to other heroes of the time. But this is very, like, I mean, kind of chipper, you know, very like, you know, I turned to a flaming skull monster, but, I got to make sure I get to work on time. And I got to do that stunt today. It's almost like a relatable thing. It's weird. It's like, he's got to go to work. He's got to punch in. It's like, he's a 9-to-5 jumping buildings still. And it's, you know, jumping miniature, you know, monuments that were from the U.S. and stuff like that. So I don't know. Just. I'm glad you enjoyed it too, because I thought you were gonna be like, Brian, you idiot.
No. I think it's just great.
I had fun with it.
All right, well, that's gonna wrap us up for this episode. Thanks everyone for listening. You can find us, as always, on Twitter at InnerDemonsGR, on Facebook at facebook.com/VengeanceUnbound, and on the blog vengeanceunbound.blogspot.com, which I finally started updating again. We're getting ready to hit 500 reviews on that blog. 500. I almost can't believe it. But yeah, it's updating regularly again. I took a big long break from doing anything with that, but I've been working on it the last couple months. So everyone should go and check it out, and hopefully there's a ton of stuff on there to read.
Right. Yep.
But all right, we will be back in about 2 weeks with some more reviews in another new episode. Brian, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Same here. And like I said earlier, it's good to be back.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, everyone. Peace.